Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Rye House Kart Raceway. Check them out at rye-house.co.uk and race in their brand new fleet of BizKart twin-engine Le Mans karts. There are still places available, so email spannersready@gmail.com or go to missedapexpodcast.com/karting. You are listening to Inside F1 with Joe Sayward on Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Inside F1 with Joe Sayward. I'm Spanners, the host and producer of Missed Apex Podcast. We are an independent podcast produced in the podcasting shed with the kind permission of our better halves. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. I'm joined in the shed by F1 media legend and international man of mystery, Joe Sayward. How's it going, Joe?
International man of mystery, I am not. But there we are. Yeah, it's fine. I've, you know, sort of been a little bit under the jet lag from Australia weekend. You know, if one goes to Australia for the weekend, it's not a sound thing to do. So I'm just getting back to normal now. I'm off to Bahrain tomorrow. So there we are.
And here's the part where we all feel sorry for international jet setter journalist Joe Sayward.
Quite right, too.
Although, I suppose it does take, what, about 30 hours to get across to Australia?
To be honest, I didn't add it up, but it was a lot of films along the way. I've watched so many films that I was watching the Russian ones on the way back. So,
do you speak Russian?
No, it doesn't matter. They were very good films, and they had subtitles. And I was very impressed, actually. They were better than the French ones.
All right. I suppose you can speak enough French to look at the French library of movies.
I watch all the movies on the aeroplanes, no matter what language, because they all have subtitles. And sometimes I can understand the language as well. But Russian is a bit of a long haul.
No, Joe. Reading is hard, which is why some people don't read your blog. They tune in to Missed Apex so they can hear you say the things instead of having to read themselves.
Sadly, I think you're entirely correct in that respect, and it's getting worse. So there we are. What can you do?
Well, I haven't read a full book since Netflix got really good a few years ago, even to the point where I bought a book to read on holiday, Ready Player One, got bored after about 15 pages and downloaded the audiobook. So it's all Netflix's fault. So Netflix is terrible, even for F1, Joe.
I'll let you get away with that one. I'm not going to argue. It's a load of tosh what you just said, but there you are. Netflix has done a super job for F1.
It's a good link, though. Good link.
The fact that you... Yes. Segue bien. Well, 25%, maybe. Anyway, whatever. Yes, very good job by Netflix. Good TV show. And actually a very, you know, very true-to-life story. Complete with all the swearing. You know, you think I swear a little bit? Boy, you want to meet Gunter Steiner and me together.
Now then, Big Ray in our Slack group, hello Ray in our Patreon Slack group, says, is Joe a fan? We have a Slack group for our patrons. Is he? I'll explain it all to you later, Joe. It's the world moves forward at a massive pace.
I'm involved on a Slack network. I just don't understand a word of it.
We'll send you a cheat sheet. But Big Ray in our Slack group says, "Are you a fan of reality TV star Gunter Looney Tunes Steiner? And is that a fair reflection of the real man?"
It's a good reflection of Gunter. In fact, I went to see him. You're going to have to bleep this next bit. I went to see him in Australia, and I said, "Gunter Steiner, you're a legend." And he went, "Why?" And I said, "Because he hadn't actually seen it at that point." I think he comes across really well. In fact, I think he was the star of the show. But that is Gunter. That's the way he is. He's very passionate, and he uses the language accordingly. But the one thing about the Netflix show is that is the language that you hear all the time in Formula One, except when the cameras are rolling.
So obviously Gunter Steiner would have known the cameras were rolling. Do you know if he's aware of how much of a megastar in F1 he's become because of that? I think universally everyone just loves him now.
Yeah, he's aware of it. The only thing he's also aware of is his wife disapproves of swearing, which is quite funny. He sort of kept looking over his shoulder going, "My wife, she doesn't like this, you know." Gunter is passionate, and that's what it's all about. And that's what I think Netflix does. It humanizes, or it has humanized, the sport. It's given everybody more of a just some more coverage of what people are really like. And I love it. I think it's terrific. And I hope there's a second series, third series, fifth series, whatever, because it's bringing in new fans. There's no question about it. Absolutely no question.
So is there a danger, though, like with the Big Brother series, Joe, which is where people went into a set-up house and they were observed 24/7 by cameras? I'm sure it was beneath your viewing habits. But the first series was quite genuine. But then the subsequent series were filled with people who were there because they thought they were going to be big stars. Is there a danger that you're going to get, like, somebody trying to be the next Gunter Steiner?
I don't know. I did hear some stories, and I can't possibly comment about who, of team principals who wanted to reshoot things.
Because, oh, come on!
I'm just telling you what I heard. Who wanted to reshoot things because they didn't like the first take. But I don't think most of them. I think most of them are too busy going racing. Those who have time to worry about whether they look good are really probably not doing a great job, or they're head of a big organization that the people are doing a job, and therefore they're not particularly useful to anybody, and therefore eventually someone will realize that they don't do much and get fired.
Well, should we go away from reality television and go onto the track, Joe? In fact, you know, your trip out to Bahrain, it means you hardly get any time at home. So thank you very much for taking some time out of your short little stint at home to come and chat to us. Does it feel like you've sort of barely touched the ground? Do you even bother unpacking?
Yeah, I've been home for a week, you know. It's the only thing is I haven't been sleeping in any way, shape or form normally. It's quite fun, actually, because I don't know what day it was, probably Wednesday or Thursday last week. And I was there looking at Twitter, and there was a great Twitter conversation going on between all the Formula One people who were wide awake in Europe.
Who were wired.
All suffering from jet lag, and all talking to each other because there was nobody else awake. And, you know, that's the way it is. And it's always been like that. You can train your mind against it. But this time I made a fairly fundamental error when I got home, which I needed to do, oddly enough. But I fell asleep in the afternoon when I get home. You should always, when you arrive back, you should stay awake until the first light falls. But I couldn't do it. It was just not possible. I would have face planted myself. And I was so tired that I just went to sleep. And that really screwed me for the whole week. So, and I'm just about back to normal now, and just enough time to go off to Bahrain. But Bahrain's only, you know, it's not a big deal.
It's no big deal. We just watched the Australian Grand Prix. As usual, it doesn't always give us an indication of the value of racing that we're going to get for the season. For a lot of regular F1 fans who kind of want to get their friends into it. You know, we go, it's the first race, come and watch it. And then we watch what is inevitably, it's good racing and it's a good track to drive on, but we don't see the action-packed results of like China and Bahrain. Is there anybody in the paddock that is kind of aware of that? Is there anything we can do?
Oh, yes. I mean, the Australia wants to be the first race, but it has zero overtaking. I mean, it's not as bad as Monaco, but it's not far short of that. And there's a certain amount of pressure on them now to say, well, if you want to be the first race, you've got to put on a good show. And the fact is that going around Albert Park, you can't overtake. And as we saw, you know, you're just stuck. So there's pressure on for them to do something about it. And they can do something about it. It's going to cost money. But if they go, just imagine you're going whizzing down the main straight in front of the pit building. And instead of turning right and then left, if you just go straight on, there is a way through. If you go look on Google Earth, you can find a way through. There's a golf driving range out there and there's a cricket oval. Okay, the cricket oval is going to get run over, but it can move sideways. You know, it's nothing that's majorly difficult. And basically, turn three would become turn one. And you would arrive with cars at screaming amounts of speed, braking heavily for turn three. And you could then have a sort of a straight long enough to make a difference, which is what they haven't got at the moment. The straights are too short. So they need an overtaking space. And I think that's one good way of doing it. Now, can I guarantee that would create overtaking before they invest millions to build it? The answer is no, I can't. But, you know, there must be a way of, and the Formula One group is working on all kinds of ways to figure out how to make overtaking work. But as Baku has shown, a very long straight at high speed is usually quite a good way of doing it. So I think that that's something that the Australian Grand Prix needs to look at, because it's never been great for overtaking, be honest. You know? And I think at the start of the season, at the end of the season, you want race tracks that really things can happen at.
And that's it. I don't think anyone's saying it's not a good racetrack. Because if you go in it in a sim, as
no,
you...
but it's not a good racetrack. It's a good track to drive.
That's more what I mean, yes.
But it's not a good racetrack. So, you know, the fact is that Formula One is a show. It's a sport. It is a competition. And you want to have a real competition, not just people sitting behind one another going, why can't I overtake? So, and I think it's particularly important, the first race and the last race, because they have a long shadow, if you like, both of them. And so I think we need to have first races and last races that are really exceptional from racing point of view. And Australia isn't. So, you know, as much as I like Australia, I don't think the racetrack is right.
We're not saying that we need to be swapping cars every corner, but certainly you don't want a track where the game is over once you get stuck behind a slower car. Certainly Gasly suffered behind Kvyat, and you would have expected on any other track that Gasly would have been able to get past under normal circumstances.
Well, actually, the best example of it was Giovinazzi, who basically stayed out for a very long time, held up all the people who should have scored points.
Yeah.
Which included Lando Norris and Alexander Albon. They were both on for point scores. But Giovinazzi stayed out deliberately, by the way. He was protecting Kimi Raikkonen and giving Kimi Raikkonen a chance to score points. But what that did was it gave Kvyat and Stroll the ability to score points when really they didn't deserve it. It was sad, because it would be great to see the young guys get points on their debuts, but Giovinazzi basically played the game and blocked them.
And it's a track that allows for that. And even just one overtaking spot, as you described, would shuffle that out. So we would still see the fastest cars competing, but they would have a chance to get past the Giovinazzis and the Kvyats, who are creating roadblocks. But that brings us nicely onto Force India. I got a lot of stick because...
who's Force India? I don't
Racing.
That.
I've still written Force India in the notes, you know. Old habits die hard. Racing Point Sport Pisa Stroll Racing. Yes? I think, yeah, we're there. We got it.
That'll something be, like
that's
that.
Close
yes.
enough. Still the pink team. But I I'm not a massive fan of Lance Stroll and have said that, you know, I think Perez will easily beat him. Of course, here comes the first race and Stroll finishes ahead of Perez and everyone goes, ah, see, Spanners, you're an idiot. And Stroll's amazing and Perez is rubbish. You've lost both two of your longest standing arguments.
Yeah, but I think it was a very special circumstance and Perez was one of the people stuck behind Giovinazzi. So I don't think that I don't think you can judge anything on the first race, to be honest. Mercedes is not that far ahead of Ferrari. And I think that Red Bull's in the mix. So, you know, it will be very interesting in Bahrain to see how it goes.
So those two's relative talents aside, I still expect Perez to come out on top of Stroll overall, especially in qualifying. But
No. If he doesn't, there's something wrong with Formula One. Or they're fiddling within the team to make the sun look good. But you're not going to do that. It would not be smart to do that. So, you know, a team needs to score points with its strongest drivers. So if Stroll's good enough, he'll you know, pull out all the stops. He should be, if he's any good, he'll be able to beat Perez. Ocon beat Perez all the time. So, you know, if he's any good, Stroll will beat Perez. If he's not good enough, he won't. It's as simple as that.
And Perez is a relatively decent marker to judge a young driver against.
Perez is a very good racing driver. There's no question about it. But, you know, he's not Ocon, as was seen last year. You know, he's not absolutely front line, but he's good enough to be there. He should be there.
The team itself, Joe, we were talking about, you know, extra finance going in. There's the backing of Lawrence Stroll and his backers. But everyone had kind of assumed that that would take a long time to shuffle in. Yet I was hearing people talking about them being happy that they can now bring upgrades from race one and they can already start their development cycle instead of having to wait till Barcelona. Are we going to see an immediate effect of the new regime at Racing Point Sport Pisa Stroll?
No, I doubt we'll see a very immediate effect. I think we need to give them time to develop more facilities. And maybe they can do a little bit more production. Maybe they'll bring a bit more in-house, which makes them less dependent on outside suppliers. But, you know, at the end of the day, they need a couple of years. They're building a new factory.
Oh, really?
If they get... Oh, yeah, it's all happening apart from the planning permission. It's 2 years to go through the process. So, but they're embarked on that process. It's next door to the old one. So, you know, it's not going to be a big deal, but it'll probably include the old one too. To be honest, I haven't looked at the details as yet. But, you know, they're moving forward. So we'll see how well they do. It's the same of any team that's been taken over by somebody else.
I don't think it is the same, Joe. I don't think it is the same. I think there's this strange drive and this not strange, that's unfair, this not quite seen before drive from the Stroll family to push their son to the front. And I mean, how does a Force India, a Force Stroll make itself into a Brackley? Is it just more staff and just throwing a weight of engineers at the problem? Is that what they're going to be looking to do? Just a huge recruitment drive?
Well, they need to recruit, but to get the right people, it takes a couple of years in Formula One these days. So,
and Stroll will only be, 22 by then. I think Stroll could be challenging for titles. That's what I think is going to happen. I think they're going to keep pumping in money until they've got a championship-winning car for Lance Stroll.
Yeah, but if he's not good enough, he's never going to win the championship, is he?
Rosberg won a championship. Oh, controversial. Don't email me. I was joking. Right.
No, you weren't joking. That's a perfectly fair comment. Nico Rosberg is not a patch on Lewis Hamilton, except when Lewis Hamilton was destabilized. And the fact that Nico won the championship was because Lewis had a breakdown in Malaysia. And Nico was smart enough to realize he'd never win the championship again. So he retired. And he knew that. He knew he wasn't as good. So otherwise, he wouldn't have retired, would he?
No, I agree. I'm trying to figure out whether I should say I was joking or not joking. I'll leave it up to you, but do send your hateful emails to joesayward@gmail.net. Why not?
Yeah, that'll do. They'll all come back, bouncing back, because that doesn't exist. But there you go. So I don't really like hate mail, so just send it to the moon as far as I'm concerned.
I'm sure you get 100 emails saying, Joe, you're amazing. Keep doing what you're doing, fella. For everyone that says, Joe, you're an idiot.
No, I don't. Actually, I get a lot of abusive stuff.
Oh, no.
And sometimes, because everybody knows better. Everyone on the internet knows better than everybody else, don't they? So I get very bored with it. And sometimes I think, why do I bother? But I keep doing it because that's what you're supposed to do. We're supposed to engage with the fans, even if the fans are morons. You know, that's just, I know it can happen. I'm sorry. You know, there are a percentage of Formula One fans who are not very intelligent. And that's just the way it is. You just have to accept that. A large percentage of Formula One fans are intelligent. But, you know, that's the internet for you. You have to accept, you know, you take the rough with the smooth. You take the drongos with the smart people. So, yeah, that's the game, isn't it?
And as a content creator or a journalist or a public figure like yourself, Joe, you are expected to kind of take your lumps. But you're only human. Let's prove him wrong. Anybody whose ears this sound is going to, let's prove Joe wrong. At Joe Sayward on Twitter, tell him how you like him and appreciate what he's doing almost as much as you like Spanners. But why don't we move on to things more positive? Because actually, when we've talked about McLaren in the entire time I've known you, it's been, oh dear, well, what's going wrong now? But, you know, Lando Norris looking pretty strong in qualifying. The whole team seems to have moved forward. They've dropped the attitude of we'll be leading the championship by the summer. It's if we reduce our expectations and squint, it kind of looks okay.
If you squint a lot,
yeah. Okay.
They have to be beating the Renault team if they are McLaren of old. Now, they are a customer engine unit. Red Bull regularly beat the Renault team. So if it's McLaren, as in the old days, they've got to be beating Renault. They're not beating Renault. I doubt they will beat Renault. And I have reservations about McLaren at the moment.
Tell
us
them.
Well, I'm not convinced yet of what they've got. What they have is a good, solid car. But I don't think it's an exceptional car. They have decent drivers who yet to prove themselves. And I think we need to have a little bit more evidence of the desire and the ability, and those two are different things, the desire and ability to be the old McLaren. I'm not sure. I don't know. It's like Williams, you know. You've got to have the desire and the ability. And they may have the desire, but they don't have the ability. Whatever it is, it pains me to see great teams in pain. But great teams in pain have to wake up to the reality of life and change. If they don't change, they'll die, like Tyrrell did.
Let's see there in the chat room, Build Motor Second. A Greek name says Joe Mack does look better. Offnell says no, Zach Brown will ruin McLaren even more. I did lead off, Joe, by saying we do need to reduce our expectations, and you went straight to, well, if it's the McLaren of old, they have to beat Renault. Do we have to be realistic? Let's look at this as Zach Brown's McLaren, if you like. It's still a step forward. Is he the right man to keep them nudging forward?
We'll see. All I know is if you go and visit McLaren in Woking, you go to a place that is far in excess of anything you will see at Enstone. They have incredible resources. They have incredible amounts of money. They should be doing better than they are. It's as simple as that. Yeah, and to be beaten by Renault is not good enough. So that's what I'm saying. Thank God it's better than last year. Last year was a complete and utter, I believe the American military has a term, the second word, well, the first word is cluster, and the second word you can make up. But last year was a disaster. And they have to come back from a long way back. And being a little bit humble is a good idea, because yes, if you talk too much of a game, you just come across as a windbag. So, you know, you don't want that to happen.
Well, you've ruined my trying to put wind in the sails. There's a lot of McLaren fans out there who want to see their team doing well. But we can be positive.
Everybody wants to see McLaren doing well, apart from McLaren haters, of which there aren't that many in the world, but there are a few. But now, McLaren is a fantastic racing team, and I want to see them do well, but I want to make sure that, you know, it's all very well. You could go on blah, blah, blah and saying it's fantastic, this and that, but it's not. The results are the only deciding factor are the results in Formula One, and they're not doing it. And Williams is even worse. You know, the fact is that neither of these teams should be where they are. I think that McLaren is better, and we'll see how it goes. But you know, how can Racing Point be beating Williams? How is that possible? They have the same engine. How is it possible?
Well, because everybody is, I suppose.
No, but the, you know, the fact is that Williams is a big team in the old sense of the word. It's a big organization, far bigger than Racing Point, and they're not doing the job. Why? Well, that's something we have to sort of figure out and decide upon. But
all right, Joe, I'll tell you what, let's figure that out and decide upon it now.
That's unfair.
Joe loves it when I put him on the spot and ask him to solve all the problems of a team or the sport in general. He also loves my bumpers and stings. That's why I play them so often on Joe's shows. Thank you very much, Joe Saywood, for joining us on Missed Apex Podcast. You have a blog. You have a little, you do a bit of writing on the side. You don't just do the podcast. You also put this into kind of written word form as well.
Well, I try to, you know, I try to keep up with the old fashioned ways, writing on papyrus and sending it in the mail. Yes, I do. And I don't think that anybody... It's easy for journalists to know all the answers, but the fact is we don't know all the answers. And there's a lot of people out there who sort of pretend they do. And maybe sometimes they get it right, sometimes they get it wrong. I don't think we can look at Williams and say it's wrong because of this, that, and the other. We can have an opinion. But we're not necessarily right. So, you know, I think there's a problem with the leadership. There's no question about it. As to which part of the leadership is another question. But I just don't think they're being inspired. The staff is not inspired. I think the way they operate is out of date. I think that they need to have someone who, you know, when you go charging to the edge of a cliff. In the old days, Frank Williams would say, "This way, chaps," and they'd go hurtling off the cliff together. And I remember when he brought one of his CEOs in, Adam Parr, and you know, Adam Parr went to the edge of the cliff and said, "This way, chaps," and they all said, "After you." You know, and I think that's something that you need to, you know, you have to have that kind of leadership, which is what Ron Dennis had, which is what Frank Williams had. And it's obviously, you know, what someone like Otmar Szafnauer has, because he runs a good ship at Racing Point. But leadership is somebody in the organization has to inspire. And that's really key to success in Formula One.
And a lot of the questions when I tweeted, "Do you have any questions for Joe?" are along these lines. So I'll just get to some of them now. I was, of course, trying to get Joe to plug his internet website, which you can find by searching Joe Blogs F1 or Joe Saywood. It will take you there. Well worth checking out. And Joe's little green notebook, I think that's what it's called, little green notebook, after every trip, where he writes in his notebook. The best, I would say, the best F1-based notebook currently around, actively creating content. Although we'll get to where the other notebook's gone in just a little while. But go and find Joe's articles.
The other notebook was a mere follow-on from mine. It was just Ted copying, you know.
We'll get the inside scoop on that in a minute. Joe also has a web-based magazine. You type it out on a typewriter, you scan it, and then you put those pages together.
GP Plus magazine.
GP Plus magazine. Is that PDF?
GP Plus magazine is an e-magazine. It never ever goes on to paper. I mean, I expect there are people who print it out, but they're really sad, sicko weirdos with very, very expensive print bills.
But you do it just after the race, Joe.
Yes, 6 hours after the race, we produce an 80-90-page magazine. It's a bargain in the century. It's cheap as chips. GrandPrixPlus.com. And it's not just me. It's, you know, there's between us, there are four of us who do it. And between us, we have attended something like 2,200 Grand Prix between us.
Amazing.
So work that out.
No, maths is hard, but it's nice of you to share the credit. I take all the glory and credit.
Well, 2,200 divided by four. You can do it. Come on.
I don't know, 17. I think 17. That's final answer. I'm going to lock that in. Peter Jenkins.
It's 3.147.
Peter Jenkins on Twitter says, how bad is the trouble Williams are in? And is their long-term future in doubt? Is this just a blip that they're going to recover from? Or are we seeing a great team being run into the ground?
Well, we are seeing a great team being run into the ground, but I think they probably have the money to survive. I hope they do. They're not like Vijay Mallya's mess last year, which, you know, resulted in Racing Point coming along. I think Williams can get through the season on what they have. Certainly, it might be tight in terms of money, but I think they've got enough to make it. I hope they do. But you know, they're a racing team fundamentally, and they will survive. They're also very good brand in racing. But I do think if they're not careful in the longer term and they keep on being last, they will start to lose the ability to stay self-sufficient. Now, Formula One is changing, and maybe if they can survive long enough until the commercial structures change. The plan is for everybody to have a budget cap of $135 million and for the sport to provide $135 million. So fundamentally, if you can survive until that arrives, you should be able to survive. So I just hope they can. But I do think, you know, if they want to be successful and they want to climb the ladder, there's certainly a lot of work to be done.
I'll go to our live chat room here, which you can find on YouTube by searching for Missed Apex Podcast. And you can join us live. Don't worry, Joe doesn't read these chat comments. So I'm just picking out the nice ones, keeping it super positive. No, they're all being nice, Joe. They love you. Lance Lassen says,
I don't care if they don't.
He's lying. It's all he cares about. When he messages me in the week and
otherwise I'd be reading them and going, ooh, ah, whatever. I don't care. You can't care about what people think, because if you do, you'll go bonkers.
It's all a front. It's spanners. What are they saying about me to you? What are they saying? I'm like, it's all right, Joe. They love you. They love you lots on the stream.
No, anyway. I've done this blog for 10 years and I know what it's like. You know, you have to take the pain. And I don't really worry about it unless it gets really extreme. And, you know, in which case, occasionally I'll just tell someone to go take a hike.
Well, Gescholtz says, we love you, Joe. Gescholtz, that's one.
I have no problem with people loving what I do. And I have no problem with people not liking what I do. What I have a problem with is when they're rude and abusive and don't have a clue what they're talking about, you know, which happens quite a lot, you know, because, you know, it's just how it is.
I like when our two audiences clash. So they've got people who've been following you for a long time and catch you on this show and go, who's that idiot jumping up and down asking Joe's questions and similar things the other way around. But hopefully we've all got used to each other now. Michael in the chat room says, keep it on topic, guys. Fine. We will. Lance Lassen's question says, has Williams reached the bottom yet, or is worse still to come before they get better? And this budget cap aside,
I think they've reached the bottom.
You think this is the bottom?
Yes.
All right. So a lot of that we think is being caused by money. Is there any way that you can?
No, it's not being caused by money. It's being caused by being badly led.
Well, you've always been quite generous to Claire Williams, though, when we've spoken about it in the past. And sometimes you might have suggested that perhaps Paddy Lowe might not have been as amazing as everyone thinks he is, or am I misquoting you?
No, that's all fair. I think, you know, the thing about Formula One is it's a complicated business. It's not easy. Paddy Lowe's a very intelligent man, a very good engineer. But just because you're those things doesn't make you a great technical leader. Adrian Newey is a very intelligent man, but he's not very good at being a technical director. He's very good at being an aerodynamicist. and making a difference in terms of performance. But, you know, he's not the technical director of Red Bull Racing. A lot of people think he is. He's not. There's a man called Pierre Vacher.
We never hear that name. Vacher.
You never hear that name, but Pierre Vacher is a technical director of Red Bull Racing because Adrian's far too busy doing other things and just dipping in and out when he feels it's necessary, when he wants to, when he sees things to do.
I'm still confused, though.
I've stunned you there, haven't I?
Well, I'm still confused about we hear that, you know, that they lost money because the Strolls held back money they should have paid them. Is that true? We hear stuff about Kubica's money being held up. Is that true? We've heard other.
I have no idea. Money. I have no idea. You know, they're not going to tell me, are they? The fact is that Stroll's money. To be fair, I think that Lawrence Stroll is a fairly straight businessman. I think probably if there's any kind of question about the Stroll money, it would be that it's not all due in the same year. It'll be spread over a period of years, and maybe they have to wait for that money to come. So maybe that creates cash flow problems that they could solve if it all arrived at the same time. But, you know, basically the Stroll deal was over a number of years, and therefore the settlement money would be over a number of years too. As to the Russian-Polish money, Polish. I have no idea.
No?
I don't know. It's supposed to be a 2-year deal, and it's supposed to be X amount. If it hasn't turned up, it hasn't turned up. But I don't know if that's the case or not. Yeah, but why is that anybody's business other than the teams? You know, the fact is, are they financially in trouble? I don't see it. No.
Wow. So it's kind of worse if they're not in financial trouble. And
yes, it is. Yes. It's actually it is worse now. It may be that, you know, we all have cash flow problems in our life. So maybe that's what they're having. But I don't see them being in imminent danger of closing down like Force India was last year.
Well, that's the impression that seems to have got to a lot of people. So when Robert Kubica goes on TV and says, well, we are really careful because we haven't got the spares to bring to change any damage. Is it because they can't afford the spares? They haven't built the spares?
It's probably because they don't have the structure, the industrial structure, to make the spares in the time available. Doesn't mean they can't do it, just can't do it quickly.
Yeah, well, that certainly doesn't bode well. If we get away from the team for a second, because they have had a proper kicking in just about every quarter of the media. I'm not saying that's not justified because they are so far off the back. And when you have two drivers who are carrying a lot of hopes, there's a lot of hope for George Russell as Brits. We haven't seen new young British drivers coming through for a little while. But I think the biggest one is obviously Robert Kubica and that huge Polish fan base that get behind him in everything he does. Michael Brown tweeted and said, how bad was Robert's race weekend? And does Joe think there's room for improvement? And he's stressing, please don't hate on me, Polish fans. He's just trying to see it for what it is, because there is goodwill. No one is saying, oh, we don't want him to do well. Everyone wants him to do well. First impression, you go, well, he didn't hit the ground running necessarily.
Listen, everybody wants the fairy tale to happen. But let's be realistic here. And I know that Polish fans can't be realistic necessarily. And they do tend to get abusive if you say these kind of things. But, you know, the fact is that Robert had a life-threatening accident that messed him up for a number of years. And for him to come back and to beat a George Russell or to be competitive in Formula One is going to be a hell of a big ask. George Russell is no slouch. You know, he's a quality driver. And he will do absolutely everything he can to extract performance from that car, which is what you'd expect from a young driver. Now, Robert's got to beat him if he wants to be taken seriously. And that's going to be tough. And, you know, I wish that there were Cinderella stories all the time in Formula One, but there aren't. Basically, it's fairly brutal and it's realistic. And nobody's screwing Robert, you know, because they want, you know, because Russell's a Mercedes driver and all these conspiracy theories that people come up with. The fact is, if he's going to do it, he's going to do it. And if he's not, it's a story that would be nice if it happened, but isn't going to happen. So we'll see. But, you know, to be honest, I think that Robert is there because of the money. And I think that's the key issue. And
yeah.
That may upset people, but that's just from my point of view, the way I look at and report on the championship. That's how I see it.
I will say, though, when he was first in Formula One, I don't remember seeing much in the way of interviews or having much of an impression of what he was like as a person. But already from one race, he comes across as very likable, very funny. And there was this beautiful video of him with a blind girl. And he was saying, well, there's two ways you can identify me. And held the hand to his injury, said, my hand's a bit different. And then put it on his nose and said, and I've got a massive nose. He's definitely winning friends in F1.
No, I mean, he's a character, and he was a terrific driver, really terrific driver, right up there with the best of them. And, you know, the sad thing is the ultimate tragedy of Robert Kubica is he had a Ferrari deal, and he had his accident and messed himself up before he could become a star driver. And, you know, if you talk to Lewis Hamilton, he'll say that the guy he respected most when they were growing up was Robert Kubica. And you know, that's quite a claim. But unfortunately, it's a Shakespearean tragedy, if you like. But Robert went because he loved rallying. Rob went on a rally and he hurt himself. And he hurt himself so badly that coming back from that is almost impossible. Now, he's got this far and good for him. And I'm in awe of that because, you know, to get where he is now is impressive. But now he's got to beat, you know, the bright young kids. He's 30, whatever it is, 4, 5, 6 years old. And he's got to beat the 20-year-olds who are, you know, who slit their throats of, well, not their own throats, slit the throats of anybody in their way. You know, because that's how it is. And Robert was like that at that age too, you know, so there's nothing new. He knows the rules of the game and he's got to deliver. If he can't, he can't.
Sport at every level, from the top professionals all the way down to the five-a-side game I play in, is relentless in churning out brand new, fast, strong 18-year-olds. And it's just, life is cruel. Is there any way we can stop this influx of youth coming in? Because I don't think I'm going to get to play football anymore.
I think King Herod had a couple of ideas on that matter, but it's probably not the right way to go, you know.
It's a controversial viewpoint, Joe.
Slaughtering the innocents. You asked me how to fix the problem. I'm merely pointing out a couple of historical references.
I'm not going to edit it out. I'm also not endorsing it. So that's where I'm going to go, Joe.
I'm not endorsing it either, but there you are, so.
Something that I think you have been endorsing this week on Twitter, Joe, and I hope you don't mind me asking, it's been very touching seeing you and a group of other F1 personalities and media guys talking about how best to pay tribute to Charlie Whiting by dedicating race control to him. It's a lovely idea that by changing that name, you're going to get people in 10 years' time going, wait, why are you calling race control Charlie? And then that story will be regurgitated. Do you think it's possible? Are the right people paying attention?
It's possible. I don't know. I mean, who knows if the FIA president's had a chance to look at it? He'd be the one who would decide that. But I think that's a living monument, if you like, to Charlie. And race control, you know, Romeo Charlie, RC. Why not? What have you got to lose? Race control is dull. To have something called Charlie is just great. I think that would be terrific, and I think it would be a great monument to him. He was a man who played a very important role in Formula One. So, you know, and he died young, bless him. You know, I mean, 66 these days is young. So, you know, I think that would be a nice thing to do. Whether Jean wants to do it, it's another matter. But, you know, even if the FIA doesn't necessarily want to do it, all the drivers can get together and just, whenever they talk about it, just say, ask Charlie. They can make it happen too.
You can make it a tradition. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was reluctant to talk about it at the time because I don't have a personal connection. So it always feels a little bit empty. Obviously, this is somebody you are interacting with on a week-to-week basis. So, you know, you're the right sort of people to be trying to make this kind of thing happen. And obviously, it's affected you guys personally.
Well, I knew Charlie for more than 30 years, so you know you're bound to feel it a little bit more than the fans, perhaps. But you know, having said that, there's a side to Formula One which a lot of fans have long forgotten, which is, you know, we 30 years ago we were used to losing people all the time, you know, and you know, so there's perhaps not the level of sort of schmaltzy romanticism that there is today. You know, it's just get on, we just get on and do the business, you know.
I mean, as a 38-year-old, I came into the sport and we didn't have those tragedies until Ratzenberger and Senna. And then we've been relatively lucky since then all the way till Bianchi. I mean, so you're right. I've not grown up in a generation where it was regular. And I hope, you know, you'll agree with me that that's better. I don't like the people who feel like there has to be that element of danger. That really turns me off. But you're right, we have a sanitized sport. I'm glad we do, but it doesn't mean we can't remember the previous incarnations of it.
It's an interesting argument, because I do believe that there is a necessary element of danger that makes it more exciting, that makes more people come to watch it. That doesn't mean I want to see people getting hurt or killed, but I think that, you know, there has to be a wow factor. The drivers have to be heroes. And sometimes, you know, you hear the drivers and they don't sound like heroes. They don't behave like heroes. And you just think, what are you doing? You're heroes. You know, you are going to be, or you should be rather, you should be the astronauts. You should be the guys that everyone goes, wow.
You know who's like that? You know who's like that in this current crop? Kevin Magnussen.
Absolutely. He's a Viking. Kevin Magnussen is a throwback to the Viking era. And if you've seen the Netflix documentary,
I'm getting there.
Kevin Magnussen says, you know, if I die, I die. You know, this is what I'm doing. And I accept the risks. Now, that's far better than having a Formula One driver who says that no Formula One driver should ever be hurt in a car. How can you say such things? You're pushing the limits. If you're not pushing the limits, you're not doing the job properly. And you know, you have to balance the Ben Hur spectacle with the danger, and also with the money. You know, they're paid vast sums of money. Is it because of their talent? No, there's a lot of talent out there. You can always find somebody else. They were paid lots of money in the old days because they took risks. And, you know, nowadays they don't take those risks. So it's an interesting reflection. You know, it's so safe. It's not ever going to be 100% safe. You can't be 100% safe. There'll always be another one. Even with the halo, there's always another way of fate taking a hand, and it's going to happen. It's inevitable that it will happen at some point.
As I used to say to my lads, you know, death only has to win once. You have to win every day, and we can creep closer to not winning that battle, but we can lose it less.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Let's go on to a slightly lighter topic. Where's Ted? Where's Ted, Joe? Everybody misses Ted. Everyone misses Ted's notebook. The second best notebook-based media F1 content there is. What's happened? Where's the mystery? Where's he gone?
To be quite honest, I think I saw Ted in Australia. In fact, yes, I'm pretty sure I did in the paddock. But he's not doing, you know, what Ted does best, which is wandering around talking to himself and talking to people and talking to the readers, the viewers.
The thing about Ted is it's a stream of consciousness, isn't it? That's what made that special segment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It was what it was. It was unique and a lot of people liked it. So the new commander in chief of F1 at Sky didn't think it was worth it. And I think probably he's got two black eyes and a bloody nose, judging by the response for Ted not being there. It's been a fairly brutal assault on him. And he has to take the flak for it. You know, there are going to be bosses who will notice that there's been a huge sort of backlash against Sky because Ted's not there. And he's going to carry the can for that. Now, ultimately, does it make any difference to the show? Yes, it probably does, because Ted was unique. Ted still is unique.
Yeah, no, let's not. Ted is in good health. He's fine, everyone. But he does. He's doing a midweek show, but somewhat more sanitized.
Yeah, he's also doing some stuff on the Formula One group on F1 TV. So I'm not quite sure exactly what that is, but he's going to be doing stuff. Which may, you know, who knows, if they're smart, they'll make it like Ted and his diary.
So, yeah, I'm not a media expert at all, and I certainly love the likes of Damon Hill, Johnny Herbert, my absolute favourite, Brundle doing the great commentary and analysis. Love having all those ex-drivers there. But you do need an element of not just punditry, because we don't want it to just be match of the day with Lineker and Ian Wright. When you've got characters like Ted Kravitz and certainly Will Buxton, who is essentially doing performance art to the camera, and it's this sculpted flow of thought and analysis, and he's using his body and his hands as much as his mouth. We need characters like Ted and Will entertaining us, not just ex-drivers telling us we don't know anything.
I think that's true. And I think also that, you know, there has been a trend of always just going for these ex-drivers, and there are just far too many of them, I think, because there are journalists, reporters, whatever you want to call them, presenters, who are quite capable of doing as good a job. You can't do, you know, Martin Brundle is exceptional, but you don't need to have 27 analysts. You know, you can get by with one. Amazing. The BBC did it with Murray and James Hunt, you know. there was no need to have, I think they had a pit lane reporter in Jonathan Palmer for a while. But, you know, you don't need to have the level of, for some reason, it was always driver, driver, driver. And it's just the way it was. But I think they would benefit from being a little bit more rounded and having the Teds of the world.
Well, he's not completely gone, but I think we've lost something out of our weekend. Ted's notebook, certainly, it had something. It was, what do you call it? Lightning in a bottle. And I don't think you could go and go, right, we're going to audition now for someone to do the next paddock book and it be the same. So there's an egg that's been fried and we can't unfry it unless they just give him that spot back. Back to a bit of on-track action then. I have a question from Twitter again, from Amy Taylor. And Amy asks, how does Joe think that Renault will do this season? And in particular, Hülkenberg versus Ricciardo. Now, I've got a particular question for you, Joe, because I've just heard little whispers that Ricciardo hasn't gone in there and it's all been sunshine and roses. He's gone in there with, not a chip on his shoulder would be unfair, but he's gone in there going, right, I need to get this done. And it's not been frictionless within the team. So I don't know, what is your viewing of this young buck coming into an established team with an established driver?
I think any young driver who wants to be successful has to be aggressive. So if he's gone in there and said, we've got to do this, this, and this, good for him. Because, you know, he's coming from a winning team to a team that hasn't won for a very long time. So, you know, they possibly need a wake-up call and a kick up the bum. It'll be very interesting to see how him and Nico do. I think Daniel's start in Australia was, well, gruesome, really. It was hideous. But I don't think we've seen all that they can do. I think they can probably do a lot more.
So are they going to finish fourth, Joe?
You'd want to hope so, wouldn't you? No, they should. I don't see them finishing above fourth, but I think they should finish fourth. What would be really interesting is the top three, how they will pan out in the long term. I think the Red Bull Honda is a lot better than people thought it would be.
Yeah, it's looking strong. I'm not quite on the hype train of them challenging Mercedes, but we've got an interesting dynamic where Ferrari is so much further back than we expected in Australia that we don't know whether Red Bull have taken a huge step forward or whether it is the status quo. It's just that Ferrari have kind of just fallen back. And if Ferrari unlock their potential, they'll slot back in between those two.
No, I don't agree with that. I think that Ferrari has a competitive car. It was tuned into Barcelona. It wasn't tuned into Albert Park. Mercedes did a better job. Ferrari will probably be back on the pace again this weekend in Bahrain.
On the Mercedes pace or on their potential pace?
I know. I think they could be ahead of Mercedes. The thing is that people underestimate how circuit-specific things are these days. And, you know, the key is not to be competitive at one race. It's to be competitive at as many races as possible. And Mercedes have been very good at that. Red Bull is still in a phase where they tend to be competitive at the short tracks with the sort of squiddly bits. and Ferrari were very good last year. So don't write them off because it's not a done deal at all. And I think we'll see that when certainly in Spain, they're going to be very competitive in Spain, but I think they'll be competitive in Bahrain and China as well.
Well, before we get to that European leg, yeah, obviously Bahrain and China are two tracks that do give us at least overtaking. Bahrain saw that glorious battle between Lewis Hamilton and Nico Rosberg. Imagine that scenario now. If you're telling me Ferrari are going to be back on pace, I'm seeing a scenario where the last third of the race on Sunday is a resurgent Bottas in full attack mode, Lewis Hamilton trying to prove that he's still on top, Sebastian Vettel with this young buck behind him. A proper four-way scrap like that would be so great for F1. And I think we're due something like that, aren't we, Joe? We deserve it.
I don't think you should write off Red Bull guys as well.
Even for Bahrain?
Yeah, because basically, you know, they may not have the outright pace, but they do have better tyre usage. So as we saw at the end of last year, they come through. And on tracks where you can overtake, we've seen Max Verstappen. And there's no reason we won't see Pierre Gasly in the mix as well. So I think we're in for a really exciting season. I don't think we should base any kind of decisions on what we saw at one race meeting in Australia, which is always a bit odd.
Oh, I want to jump to conclusions and wildly speculate. You ruin everything, Joe.
Well, please feel free to jump to conclusion, wildly speculate, but I'm not going to, so.
Yes. Well, everybody join us for our race review on Sunday, which will be at 8 p.m. UK time. Don't forget, international listeners and viewers, that we are moving to BST, British Summertime, between qualifying and the race, but I only operate on UK time because I'm just bone ignorant. Sorry about that. I am going to ask you about tracks, Joe, but before that, I want to plug a track we're going to, which is Rye House, just north of London in Hoddesdon. It's Rye House Kart Raceway, where we are going to be taking 51 drivers for 12 races of action-packed racing. You can race against myself, Alex Jeansy Van Jean, Bradley Philpott, Chris Stevens, Kyle Power. Who have I left out? I'm definitely going to offend someone. But the bottom line is you can come and watch us do a live podcast recording at 11 if you wish. And then you can come karting with us and then we'll hang one on for a beer as well. If you want to take one of the last remaining spaces, it's £79 for the 20th of April. And you can email me spannersready@gmail.com or go to mistapexpodcast.com/karting. And don't be afraid to come alone. Everybody there is into karting, Formula One, and hopefully likes Missed Apex as well. It would be strange if they came there just to hate us in person. Joe, you can't come because you're dressing up as the Easter Bunny and delivering Easter eggs that day.
Probably. I'm foreign, you know. I live abroad.
So. You'll come to the next one, though, won't you, Joe? You'll come to the next one.
I don't know. It depends when it is. I have to occasionally go home. This is something that is a necessary requirement of life. And as a Formula One reporter, getting home is quite rare. Last weekend, I was at home for my granddaughter's fourth birthday party. And you wouldn't have got me away from that for all the tea in China. So
it sounds like a brush off, kids. Don't worry. We'll work on Joe for the next one. But do come and join us at Rye House Kart Raceway on the 20th of April for some karting. Joe, but tracks.
You're going to go to Oddsden. I mean, you know, it's a dangerous neighbourhood.
It's perfectly safe. The dinosaurs outside it aren't real. And there is a family park.
There are dinosaurs in Oddsden?
There is, yeah. You can take your family there to play with the dinosaurs while you come racing with us. Joe, everyone always wants to ask you about tracks. And Anders in our Slack group says, any insider information, Joe, on the 2020 calendar? Silverstone, Monza, Mexico, possibly Barcelona, Austin, Hanoi, Netherlands. Sam Harper continued in the chat room that if there was a Dutch GP next year, he would chew on his shoe. He won't commit to eating his shoe, but he will chew it.
I hope it's a clog he gets to chew on, because I think there will be.
You think we're going to that there Holland? Hang on, I always get told off. Holland is a region of the Netherlands, so it'll be the Netherlands GP.
This is very true. It is.
Right. There you go. I got it right, Dutch fans. It does seem ripe for a Grand Prix, just given the fan base that is there.
Yes, it does. And there are others too. I think, as I keep saying to everybody, watch out for South Africa, because it's going to happen.
South Africa?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Why is that not registered in my radar before?
Because you're not reading the right stuff.
So you should read the right stuff by searching for Joe Sayward.
No. You need to actually read the insider newsletter I do. That's where I've written that mainly.
Still waiting for mates rates on that. Come on, Joe.
No, there's no such thing as mates rates. You know, a man's got to eat. Look at me. I'm getting skinny in my old age. So, you know, so.
Yes. Sorry, you should always say yes when someone says that. Joe, so no more inside scoops for us. How about Silverstone, where they're always threatening to have this as the very last race? Do I need to rush to get my historic last ever Silverstone Grand Prix tickets and memorabilia?
Probably not. I think it's logical that they will find a solution. They're not very far apart on money. The British Grand Prix is an important race. Silverstone would be stupid to lose it. Formula One would be stupid to lose it. So, you know, it kind of makes sense to find a solution, doesn't it? Now, if there was a solution elsewhere in Britain, you know, if there was a race in London, well, perhaps Silverstone need to watch out. But I can't see anything happening in London at the moment.
All right, Joe, we're going to let you pack your flight bag for Bahrain. But before you go, let's see if I can convince you to tune into any of the upcoming Missed Apex podcast shows. Will you be tuning into our live stream Sunday, 8 p.m.?
No.
No, I guess you'll be busy selfishly working on your own GP Plus magazine that people can subscribe to. Very reasonable rates. Would you perhaps be convinced to tune in to our conversation with Statman Sean Kelly the following week? Could that tempt you?
It depends on the date and the time, because I'm flying around doing stuff. You have to fit, as a Formula One reporter, you have to fit your entire life into half the time. I've been out there today woodworking in the garden, digging things up, you know, things that need to be done.
He's got staff. Don't believe him. He's got staff. What he means is he was coordinating people doing all of that.
No, I was actually doing it. If you look very closely, you can see sawdust in my hair. So,
but if you were at home,
I changed my shirt, actually, incidentally, coming on, because I didn't want to look as though he was a sort of yokel who works in the garden. You know what I mean?
We'll send you some team wear, Joe. We'll send you some Missed Apex gear.
Oh, I can hardly wait.
I choose to believe that that is sincere. Well, maybe then, that same
I'll do that again with sincerity. I can hardly wait.
That edit's going to sound brilliant. Maybe we
I
could
can hardly
you.
Wait.
Maybe we could tempt you to listen in to Matthew Carter, who's going to come and chat to us on the live stream soon.
Matthew, I'll listen to Matthew if I can. He's always entertaining. So
fantastic, guys. Wherever you catch us next, follow us on Twitter at Missed Apex F1. We have a Facebook group as well. Search for Missed Apex Podcast on Facebook, or you can find me by searching for Spanners Ready anywhere on the internet. Until next time, remember that wounds heal, chicks dig scars, and glory lasts forever. This was Inside F1 with Joe. And me, I helped. Someone has to press record.
Can I have dinner now?
You not at dinner yet. It's super late. What is it? Is it 9 o'clock in France?
It's 9:08, yes.
All right then, I suppose.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. Both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.